Yeah. Oh, Gino. So awesome. You know, Gino and I did not communicate about our attire this morning, but we both wore our spandex bell bottoms, which I've never seen you in spandex bell bottoms, and I hardly ever wear mine, so there you go. There was one mind, evidently, speaking through both of us. That was amazing, and thank you so much to the band as well. Just beautiful. Thank you. So if you noticed the newsletter or what have you, you know that today's a little bit different, that I'm actually going to be interviewing Gino as instead of a sermon. And the reason that I'm doing that is that our movement, the Centers for Spiritual Living, has encouraged all of us to start to take broader steps in embracing diversity. And I think that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing for us. So it's a beautiful thing for our movement as well. As you know, there has been lots of stuff going on in the news for several years now, many years really, since the beginning of time, I think, that are the opposite of diversity. There's racism and homophobia and all kinds of things. And in a way, it's a good thing that it's coming to light now, because it gives us a chance to do the work to heal it, to look at it and see how we can do things differently to truly create that world that where we live as one, as Gino so eloquently said in her song. It also gives us the opportunity to delve deep into our own spiritual teaching, into the Science of Mind teaching, which is what we practiced here, founded by Dr. Ernest Holmes. One of the first things that I learned in the Science of Mind teaching was from Louise Hay. And anybody read Louise Hay's books, right? You Can Heal Your Life, and it's a great book. It's a good starter book for Science of Mind. And she says right off the bat, I am responsible for everything that happens to me. I create everything that happens to me. I thought, okay, all right. And I would say to that, yes and no, because when you teach foundations 20 times like I have, there's that thing about good and evil and that business about am I responsible for everything that happens to me, and people always want to go to the Holocaust, and they say, are the Jewish people responsible for what happened to them? Are the people that were enslaved in America, were they responsible for what happened to them? How about the survivors of sexual abuse? Were they responsible for what happened to them? And if we say yes, it sounds an awful lot like blaming the victims, doesn't it? Right? So I think that there's a way to reconcile this by saying that we are all responsible. Because a lot of these things that happen to people happen through this thing that we call race consciousness, which is the human race consciousness, which is the collective consciousness that says it's okay to discriminate against certain people. It's okay to enslave certain people. It's okay to be evil to certain people. Don't take those words out of context, by the way. It is not okay. It is not okay for the whole human race to do that. What we're doing as a human race, I think, is projecting our shadow onto certain groups. And I have this great poem that one of our congregants shared with me. It's called How to Create an Enemy by Sam Keen. And he says, start with an empty canvas. Sketch in broad outline the forms of men, women, and children. Dip into the unconscious well of your own disowned darkness with a wide brush and stain the strangers with the sinister hue of the shadow. Trace onto the face of the enemy the greed, hatred, carelessness you dare not claim as your own. Obscure the sweet individuality of each face. Erase all hints of myriad loves and hopes and fears that play through the kaleidoscope of every finite heart. Twist the smile until it forms the downward arc of cruelty. Strip flesh from bone until only the abstract skeleton of death remains. Exaggerate each feature until each person is metamorphosed into beast, vermin, insect. Fill in the background with malignant figures from ancient nightmares, devils, demons of evil. And when your icon of the enemy is complete, you will be able to kill without guilt, slaughter without shame. It's powerful, right? This will be in the newsletter, by the way, posted on the website in the newsletter, because it's a powerful poem, and we're all to a certain extent doing it. But the thing is that as soon as we acknowledge that we are projecting our shadow onto others, as soon as we acknowledge it, then we can start doing something else. We can start raising our awareness. The form of activism that I choose here is a little different because I think the language of activism and language of protest needs to change. Have you noticed that outrage does not get us very far? Outrage simply seems to create more outrage. And so what I'm advocating here, and again, this will also be in the newsletter, a link to our website that says the advocacy for activism here, we advocate together the willingness to see wholeness in all things, to reveal wholeness, because there is nothing to be healed, only wholeness to be revealed. So to see wholeness in all things, to practice principles of reconciliation, whatever that means to you, for here it means this thing that we call the third force, which I'll explain another time. And then to live like the truth of our unity, of our oneness, is true. To live like the truth is true through practicing small acts of kindness that dispel the illusion of separation. That's the activism that I believe can change the world as it evolves. You know, like I said, the language of protest and activism has to change because it's not working. And that is one of the reasons that I invited Ms. Gina Walker here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Gina, and then I'm going to call her up on stage. Gina is a beautiful, strong woman, as she has just demonstrated by her wonderful singing. She has a career as a singer and also as a speaker. She also has a wonderful YouTube channel, a show called Pass the Mic. Then I will put a link to that on the newsletter as well. And she's more than that, she is my friend. Gina and I have been friends probably since I first started coming here, and boy, I have so many Gina stories. She's she's really loud at sporting events. We went to we used to have a softball team here called the Ventura Mystics, and we went to a softball game together, and the umpire did a call that she didn't like, and she started booing him. And the umpire was not happy. He came over, he says, "Are you booing me?" And Gina goes, "I'm booing you with love." The other thing about Gina that's so amazing to me is that she is a bold daredevil, that she's done bungee jumping and all kinds of jumping out of planes. And Gina, for her birthday, it was a significant birthday, it had a zero after it, invited Carol Lotz, who is here today, and me to go hot air ballooning with her. And that was actually a turning point for me, because that was one of the things that I would have looked at the email and just said, "Oh, that's not me, I'm not doing that." But I looked at it and I said, "Oh, it's Gino, it'll be super fun." And so then I decided to do it. And as Carol and I were driving there, Carol always reminds me of this, she said, I was saying, "Do you think we can pay money to get out of this?" Because not only is Gino a daredevil, she is wild. I could just see Gino like leaning over the basket and rocking the boat and everything. But we did it and we lived. And as I said, that was a turning point in my life, because from that moment forward, I started trying to do more things that I was afraid to do. So I'd like you all to welcome one of my dear friends and one of our teachers, Ms. Gina Walker, to the stage.
Sure.
It's cushy.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that was spectacular.
Well, thank you, Gino.
My God.
I thought about it before I said
you
it.
You did.
So I put a little effort into it, yeah. So we're here to learn about diversity, specifically racial diversity. And I know that you are a strong and bold and beautiful woman, but I wonder if you would be vulnerable with us for just a moment and let us know, so that we can deepen our compassion and understanding, let us know if you've ever been hurt by the appearance of racism in your life and what that was like. If you could tell a story about that.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the very first time that I really became aware of it, I think I was about 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. I'm from the Midwest, St. Louis, Missouri. And I was at the movies with some friends of mine. And when we came out, this car came by and he threw a beer can and he called us the N-word. I was furious. I ran to my car and started chasing these fools. Fools
bold
of
woman,
love.
Like I said. Daredevil.
And my friends were screaming and going, but I was so irate. Mm-hmm. And that was my first experience of it really hitting me.
Yeah, and that was when you were very young. And how did that evolve over the years? Were there more stories?
There are a lot of stories. I have to say that up until maybe about a year and a half ago, racism was something that was happening to me. I am a huge Abraham Hicks fan. And I was listening to them one day, and a lady was on there saying that she wanted to introduce her son to Martin Luther King, but she did not want to bring the prejudice into it. And Abraham, now, for those of you, if you may not know, Abraham is like a channeler, channels through Esther Hicks. And so Abraham said, it's not the person giving the racism, it's the person receiving. I went from infinite source to, what is that white woman talking about? She is out of her mind. I was furious. I was really upset. And as life would have it, things started happening. And one of the major stories that happened for me was maybe a few days later, I was in Palm Desert going there, and our rehearsal was like at 7:15 in the morning. Yeah, I know. That's an AM call with vocals open. And I get out of my car, and the lady pulls up in this beautiful white Mercedes. And when she jumps out, she sees me, grabs her bag, and tucks it. I know, I was like, you know, in a couple of hours, you're going to be like, oh, my God, your voice is so wonderful. You're so sweet. Can I buy a CD? And I was like, no! I'm not going to sell you a CD. That other voice was like, what are you talking about? Sell her too. But in any case, in rehearsal, it was really, before it would have hit and bounced off, but in rehearsal, the bass player looked at me and said, where is my Gino? Because I'm pretty lively. And I was really upset. When I went into the bathroom, I started crying. And I'm like, I'm here to get love. I'm here to be loved. And I was like, Gino, pull it together, because I got to go out and sing now. And so I had a prayer, and I did. And sure enough, she came through my line. I was thinking, and then a couple of days later, something else happened. But the transformation, well, a couple days later, I lived in Pasadena, and I was walking past this store, and this guy said, hey, you, stop! And I put my hands up. And he was running after someone that had left their wallet, but I put my hands up. And when I went home, I realized what Abraham was talking about. Back to infinite source, it was. That there were stories that I had began, that, well, not began, but there were stories that I held as true. That if a white person saw me and grabbed her purse and tucked it, that she was doing that because I was black. That this man was running and saying, hey, stop. And as a kid, my mother told me, don't be touching anything because people might think you steal something. So keep your hands to yourself. And when this became very real for me, you know, I shared it with friends, and they were like, what are you saying? Are you trying to say ain't no racism? And they said a few other choice words. And it was not that I was saying that there isn't racism, but I realized my participation in racism. And that we as a country, as a people, we have had these stories when our consciousness was growing and trying to understand the beauty of our differences that created separation. And now we're in a space where, you know, I don't care how many people try to go to black organizations and we love you and we want to appreciate you, you're seeing it separate. We're still seeing each other as separate. And so that was really huge for me. And it broke me open, broke me wide open. My sweet sister Carol Lotz here invited me to talk about diversity at a seminar that she was doing. And so I shared the story of the lady and the car and all that. And she was
there.
With the purse?
Yeah.
And she was there. She was there. I was like, look at spirit. And for me, I'd gone through the healing process, and she immediately went into trying to explain what she was doing. And as I said to her, it doesn't matter what you are doing. It matters where I'm holding my conversation about you and about things. And so recognizing that we want to bring people together, but not because we're separate, but because we want to share the greater glory of what God is. And so my diversity workshop is on recognizing where your prejudices are. Because when you clean up your house, then you can open up to see people as people.
So Gina, when the woman explained why she grabbed the purse, do you remember what she said about that?
Yeah, she said that her purse was really very heavy. And then she went on to say, well, I'm married to a black man, so there's no way I can be prejudiced. She didn't say that, but that's what she meant. So yeah, that's what she meant. And we do that, you know. Yeah. Oh, I have Jewish friends. I'm not racist. I have Jewish friends. Or, oh, no, the lady that does my clothes, she's Latino, you know. Mm-hmm. We these things, like, it clarifies that we're not racist, but we are. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things to become aware that each of us have our own prejudice and racism, stories that we have had from forever. And if we're going to move forward, those stories have to be dissolved.
Mm-hmm. What was the hardest part about dissolving your story?
Taking ownership that there are still people that are racist out there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like if I go into a store and I see a clerk moving, my first thought was, oh, there he is. Here I go. He's watching me. He's following me because I'm black. Mm-hmm. Well, that could be his story. Or he could just be a clerk that the manager said, as soon as somebody comes in the store, be available. Be available. That's possible, right? I'm like, yeah, Gino, that's possible. Mm-hmm. But my story has been that if you're following me and I'm in a store, you're following me because I'm black. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, those stories that I contain, I have to become aware of and release those stories.
Right. So it doesn't matter as much what's going on with the other person. It's more about what's going on with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Law of attraction is law of attraction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was like, why do we think it would be different when it comes to racism?
Yeah.
What we put out is what we get back. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed that as I stopped putting out the stories unconsciously, that you are doing something to me because my skin is different, then I didn't see those people. Mm-hmm. I didn't see prejudice. I didn't see racism. I saw somebody either doing their job or not doing their job. I saw somebody holding a purse or tucking it, however. My story changed, and so the people that came into my circle, they changed.
They seemed to change, yeah. So, you know, it really is like the poem that I just read about projection, that we're projecting our shadow onto others. And when I first read the poem, I was thinking, oh, yes, we do that with minorities, or we do that with people that we're afraid of. But it sounds like you're talking about projecting your own shadow onto, say, an innocent woman who's picking up her purse that's heavy. And part of your healing has been claiming your shadow, your old stories that no longer serve you, and letting them go, and choosing from the infinite realm of possibilities, choosing a story that not only serves you, but serves the consciousness of oneness.
It does. It serves the consciousness of oneness for me. And let me just say this, that my stories were built on experiences.
Yes, of course.
And so there are experiences, and people are having those experiences. It doesn't take away from that.
Right.
But what I'm really saying is that we as a people, we can't keep trying to put a Band-Aid on racism by saying, I love you, when in your heart you may have feelings about people that maybe you don't want to look at. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always have to be color. It could be sexuality. It can be people that are in a wheelchair or that walk with a cane. We have labels that we've put on people, and you've heard stories as a kid. You know, I had one lady that expressed to me about how her father just thought that anybody that wasn't the same complexion, that they were the scum of the earth and they couldn't be trusted. And so those are things that are back there that they come up when we get fearful. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if we don't look at them, I was telling this community, you're so busy want to bring diversity and bring other people in. Well, you're going to bring in what you don't want. Because the community still has issues. People have issues that they haven't become aware of or they don't want to be aware of. Uh-huh.
So we brought you in. Did we do something wrong?
No, but I brought a few. Look, I brought some black people in today. Look at that.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to be, talk about my racism. I attended a Richard Rohr seminar, who's a Catholic mystic, and I went there, and I'm so used to attending Science of Mind things that have quite a bit of racial and sexuality diversity that I went there, and there were all these white people in polyester, and I was like, oh, I don't fit in here. And look, I'm a white person in polyester this morning, right? But I had to let go of the story, because I also thought that they would think that I, belong to a cult because I'm in this church, right? Mm-hmm. But as soon as I started, we had a circle conversation around one of the round tables we were sitting in, and as soon as I started talking to people, it was, we just saw that underneath everybody was the same, and I didn't even bring up the issue of you're all white and wearing polyester. There was one woman there who was saying that in her Catholic church that they had an issue where there was there were two priests, and one of the priests refused to do the funeral of a man with AIDS. Mm. And I know. And I'm going, oh, just breathe through this, see what she has to say. And then she said, but the other priest insisted on doing it. And I just said to her, I'm really proud of that other priest. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I didn't have to attack her for her priest's behavior. I just got to acknowledge the beauty that was in her recognition of the other priest. Yeah. Yeah.
When you do come from a place of love, when you recognize your own little prejudice or racism within, one of the phrases that's kind of a cliche phrase now is, what is that, white guilt? What is it called?
Yeah.
White privilege.
White privilege, but there's white guilt too.
White privilege. Yeah. It's like, to me, that's still in the same arena. Mm-hmm. We've come up with a different name that keeps us separate, because now you want to come to me and say, oh, I'm so sorry about white privilege. So so you agree that I don't have any privileges, that you got all the privileges.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to be, that's supposed to be like an apology. And we've tried apologizing, and I say we as a country, and it's kind of like when I used to look at some of the talk shows, and someone would come on there and they'd say, when I was in the eighth grade, so-and-so did this, And whoever the person was that they were talking about, most of the time they had no recollection of what they were talking about. But then they said, okay, if I did that, I apologize. And the person would always say, well, that's just not enough. It's just not enough. And so when we look at race to race trying to apologize, it hasn't been enough. Mm-hmm. Because there's an apology. I had to apologize to myself for thinking that I was less than. Mm-hmm. Because if I saw myself as a black woman first, then I saw myself separate from you. Mm-hmm. And I start saying, no, Gino, you are a child of God. I am here as a divine and unique expression with the magnificent, beautiful color that's toned, tan, and sexy.
Yeah, so what a different way to move through life that is. I am a beautiful woman with a tone that is what?
Toned, tan, and sexy.
Toned, tan, and sexy. I like that. Yeah. So a couple of things. I want to talk a little bit about what I call the culture of apology, and also, what if you really do encounter a bigot? But let me talk a little bit about the culture of apology. I actually believe in apologizing, but I believe it's similar to what you say, in that I believe that everybody can apologize. In the infinite mind of God, there is no need for apology. That's why Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "My life is not an apology, but a life. My life is not an apology, but a life." But with all of the division in the world, it seems to me that if we were just to apologize to one another, whether we did it or not, whether our ancestors did it or not, it seems that that would open some type of a channel. And yes, I agree that things need to go deeper, but I think that the power and the spirit of apology is beautiful, if it's coming from the right place, not coming from a place of you're somehow less than me, so therefore I get to apologize. No, I apologize to you, and you apologize back to me, and we share that, and something in that reconciliation causes something brand new to burst open. I haven't really tried it yet. I'm going to try it with you. But
I'll give you a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's just, Gino said it slightly differently, I'm saying it slightly differently. It's just things for us to keep in heart and mind and see what resonates and feel what feels the most authentic to us. You know, I believe in apologizing to homeless people, people without homes. Not that I've deliberately hurt the homeless, but there have been times that I've been disdainful of homeless people. There have been times when I'm sure that I have overlooked homeless people. So I apologize for overlooking you. I apologize for thinking that somehow you're less than simply because you don't have a home. And that moves me into a greater place of recognizing our oneness, that I am you and you are me, and I am the homeless brother or sister on the street, and I am the person who's addicted to heroin, and I am all of these things. And that's what I long for, the capacity to hold both the darkness and the light and to see that it's all part of the human experience. So that's part of my vote for apology. But you don't need to respond to that, because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what you're saying is very law of attraction and very Esther Hicks and very wonderful, and I completely support you. But what do you say to people that are not in that place where they're not quite able to reconcile or recognize what we're talking about here, the power of our personal responsibility in issues of racism or sexual abuse or anything like that, when there truly is somebody who's acting like a bigot? How does that change you now that you've had this new revelation? If somebody really does like throw a can at you and say the N-word, does that change you at all? Has your revelation changed you?
Perfect question.
Yes.
After Carol's seminar, mm-hmm. I was in San Diego and I had to get to Santa Barbara. So I went to the service station, and there was so much energy and love and joy moving through me. And I stopped at the service station, and I'm getting gas, and I go, ooh, I may get a lotto ticket to win me some $25 million. And I didn't have cash on me, and so the guy behind me, the clerk had started to ring it up, and the guy behind me was like, oh, my God. I said, it's okay, it's okay. You don't tell me what to say. And he called me a black A woman.
What?
And I looked at him.
What was that?
Well, I don't want
never mind,
a black right? booty woman, but oh. The other word with an A.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry, I wanted to get the whole picture.
So there's a clerk behind there, and there's a woman behind him. And it startled me, and I said, whoa, dude. And that's when I knew that I had shifted to another level, yeah. Because old Gino would have cussed him like nobody's business. And I looked at him and said, ooh, you need so much love. I said, I'm just going to love you. I said, please go ahead and serve me. You don't tell him what to do. He was still angry. So the lady behind, she started tearing up. I said, I'm just going to love you. And I stepped to the side and said, I can love him. I don't have to be. And I started talking to myself out yeah. loud. I can just love him. What he does doesn't have anything to do with me. You're crazy, aren't you? You're a crazy black, you know. And so he paid for his gas, and he went out there. And so the guy behind the counter says, how did you do that? I said, you know what? It wasn't me. It wasn't me. And I'm not saying that I can always show up like that, but I realized that the magnitude, the energy that was going out, that the energy that I was putting out, there are people that I know dearly that are like, Gino, you are crazy mm-hmm. to talk about racism from this point of view, because there's still the anger mm-hmm. that we've been done wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how long is that story going to support you? Is it a satisfying story? Mm-hmm. And I do believe in the law of attraction, and I do believe that personally, I must stand in a different space. Mm-hmm. And so when I am in the presence of someone that is looking and searching, I hope that I'm can shift to that space to see that that is God, to know that no matter where they are, that they're in their journey as well, and I've crossed their path for a reason. Mm-hmm. And if I do my work consistently, when they cross, I will be able to hold up a guard of love and say, go ahead and pass.
Absolutely.
And so that is the hopeful intention, and I recognize when that happened that you can do this, because I didn't get angry at all because I realized that it's not me. See, that's one of the things. It's not me that they're angry at. Mm-hmm. He's angry at life. He had a beautiful car. The guy said, he's like that all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he laughed. He said, except he doesn't call me black. Because he's a white boy.
Yeah.
But the anger is the anger. And we put it off on people's color or their culture or if they're handicapped. The anger is the anger.
Yeah.
And so for me, it is to constantly do the work to keep loving.
Yeah.
Because God is him as well.
Yeah.
God is.
Yeah. Well, he was a great, you know, you just spoke your truth to Carol's class, and he was a great indicator from the universe saying, did you really mean that truth?
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he really showed up for you.
Yeah.
And how wonderful. In a way, it's I think of like the crucifixion story about, you know, quote unquote, dying for people's sins or dying for people's sense of separation. Mm-hmm. So you died, your ego died in that moment, and you were able to resurrect and be the source of love that you naturally are. You know, and what I see too is you know, the work that you're speaking about, you've stopped projecting your own fear stories onto people that appear to be bigoted or not bigoted or what have you, onto everybody, let's just say. And when we stop projecting our own fear stories onto people, then when they project their fear stories onto us, we no longer have to identify with the projection, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So it's like Ernest Holmes says, your judgment judges you, your projection projects back on you as well. So as we stop our projecting and just own our space in the kingdom of heaven, own the place that knows that we are completely loved and loving, if we start to own that, then people, strange people may come and go, but it just slides off of us like Teflon because it doesn't have anything to grasp onto. It doesn't have a story to stick its claws into, right?
It doesn't, and I agree with you that I think these are the most amazing and powerful times because we are getting a chance to see how the old paradigm, that I call it, of our thinking, of our beliefs, it is showing up and it is saying, this is what we have at this moment. Mm-hmm. But this is old. We have an opportunity now to lift and shift the way we think and feel in a different way.
Yeah.
If we keep doing the same thing,
expecting
a different outcome, the picture just gets bigger.
Yeah.
And right now, it's pretty doggone big.
It's pretty doggone big.
Ooh!
Yeah. So with that in mind, because we're all playing a part in this, in the very beginning I said that we're all responsible, that we all are holding projections and that we all have issues of, you know, issues with diversity or racism or whatever it is. Do you have an assignment for us? Is there something that we can do as a congregation, as individuals, that will help shrink the old picture and expand the new paradigm?
If you take this mission, this is not a mission for the light of heart. First, I would say, when you have a chance, write down three things that you hold as prejudice or racism. If it's about another race, if it's about a different culture, just write it down so that you see for yourself where you're playing, how you're playing on the field. And then after you do that, whatever it is, decide this week that you're going to embrace it and step and do something different. So if it's people with long brown hair, if you see somebody with long brown hair, but it has to come from the heart, that's the most beautiful hair I've ever seen. If it is somebody of color, if it's a young man wearing a hoodie, hey, young man, that's an awesome hoodie that you got on. Just start recognizing where your conversation is about somebody that's different from you, mm-hmm. and be willing to start having a different one.
That sounds wonderful. Yes, it's wonderful. So, Gino, I just want to tell you how grateful I am. How grateful I am that you're my friend, and so grateful that you... This is my first time doing this. Did it go okay? Thank you. Yeah? Okay. All right. So you...
I'm not done yet. I love you too.
Thank you. Thank you, Gino. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to say we're so blessed to have a minister like Bonnie Rose that's willing to step out and step into, this isn't easy, comfortable, because everybody's not going to be like, And so I just want to say thank you for
that.
Thank
you, my pleasure. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Gino. Okay. All right.